Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy. Tom Metzger right here in the bunker.
Yeah, want to roll into it? Okay.
I think it's okay with the light, with the little light turning on.
It's
okay. It's really nice. And you always look at me.
Sure. The last German crew, I had a black German lady interview me.
Yeah. Okay, wow.
I thought I was privileged.
I can't do that.
Okay, I want to roll. Let's roll all the speed. Oops.
So we're fine.
All ones. Do you mean this disc? Did you just format this disc or no?
I didn't touch it, no.
Tom, is your camera on?
Yes. Okay. It better be. It's got a red dot there.
Then it should be.
Give me that tape, John.
Huh?
The disc. Because it's giving me some weird thing here. Make sure it's... It should be a new one.
Here you go.
I'll adjust it when you're in 90 minutes. It's fine.
I was just making sure.
No, I appreciate it.
So make sure you didn't lose anything.
A little dark now.
Oh, I'll fix that. No problem.
Just wanted to make sure.
I'm going to lose all my powers.
It's different now, it's fine.
Make me too dark.
So easy to change skin color. Make you a bit darker.
That's right.
They once were that, well, I don't know if it was an American movie, about a man who in the morning woke up and he was getting dark.
Oh, comedy? I think I saw that movie, yes.
And he started with the hands and then he covered them and at the end his whole face and everything was black.
Give me other. Yeah, I can't see the menu if it's bright. So.
Oh, no, I'm fine.
I shouldn't look there anyhow.
Yeah, you shouldn't. I do.
Jeremy, give me a dual side of the one, please.
This thing's giving me trouble.
Does it work? Or?
When I was in California, yet I read for a couple of movies up in Hollywood.
Oh, okay.
They didn't pick me, though.
But you tried to get up?
Yeah.
But you once played yourself in a movie, wasn't it? There's some movie...
Well, no, that was in American History X.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Sorry,
buddy. I can't remember. The older guy that was sort of running
that's
the kid.
Kind of is the head of the kid.
Yeah. Well, that was supposed to be me.
Oh, okay.
We helped him make that movie.
Okay.
What was his name, the director? Danny Kaye.
Tony Kaye.
Tony Kaye.
Yeah.
Came over from England to make the movie.
Yeah.
And I helped him make a documentary for the BBC for him. And then he wanted to make that movie, American History X.
Okay.
So he called me. He wanted a bunch of skinheads to show his actors how to do the movie.
Okay.
And so I got him a bunch of skinheads and trained him to do the movie. So
okay.
I helped make that movie.
So how did you like it?
The good parts I thought were better for us. I thought it was weak on the what they were trying to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, a guy in prison is not going to change his racial views just because one black guy's friendly to him and tells him jokes. I mean, if you saw the movie.
Yeah, I did.
I mean, white guys talk to black guys all the time in prison. That don't make you change your racial views. You know?
Mm.
In fact, the black guy probably wouldn't respect you if you did. You know?
Mm.
And then,
don't you think he, like in the film, he finally changed his views?
Oh, yeah.
Like how the white people treated him, and not because of the nice black guy?
Yeah. Of course, the big punchline was at the end when the black killed his brother.
Yeah.
It was like saying, whoa. You know what I mean? It depends on how you look at the film. I've got the original script before
mm-hmm.
they changed it.
Okay.
He had to sue. He sued New Line Pictures over that movie because they let who's that actor? That young actor.
Okay, we're fine.
No.
Okay,
yeah.
We discussed the film afterwards and.
Sure.
Before all the people get in the room behind you.
Ready to go.
I'll go in there. I'll get them quiet.
Don't scare them. I'm not really sure what they're
trying to do something here.
You find Jeremy?
Yeah.
All soon is that?
Mm-hmm.
Till it's done. Time code hour 2. We're good to go.
Okay. Okay. So for the first, I would like to start with the complex of the leaderless resistance. So can you explain me what leaderless resistance means for you?
It means to me independent people in charge of their own life and their own future that wish to lead themselves and don't have to have organizations and big shots to tell them what to do. They know what to do. They know how to act. And so... they don't have to go to meetings. They don't have to go to rallies. They don't have to wear uniforms or wave flags. So they're leaderless. They're their own leader.
So in your...
Can you rotate a little bit clockwise your body, just a little bit up the other way? Yep, perfect. And you can look right at you. A little bit closer to the lens if you can. Bam,
I'm
just going to be a little bit closer,
a bit closer
yep.
to you.
Yep, perfect. Thank you very much. Okay, that's perfect. Thank you.
So in your writings about the leaderless resistance, you have two concepts, the lone wolf and the cell. What is the characteristic of a lone wolf?
The characteristic of a true lone wolf is he or she operates mostly, totally under the radar. They join organizations that may be on the other side. They go to work for the government. They go to work for even the police and other things, and they keep their mouths shut. They don't tell anybody what their racial views are, and they do their job and career and operate that way. And then they are valuable to us for information.
So would you see yourself as a lone wolf, or are you too explicit?
I'm really very out in the open. I've been out in the open for so long, I couldn't be a undercover. Now, a lone wolf doesn't have to be undercover. If you want, if a lone wolf wants to be out in the public, if people know him around his town and they like him and all that, fine. But they're more valuable when they're able to infiltrate the system itself.
And the other idea is the cell strategy. So what is necessary if a cell shall work successfully?
I don't advocate as highly the cell, but there's sometimes people who have close associates, like a brother, their own family, someone they trust with their life, a brother, sister, and like that, to where two or three people want to work together as a team. But beyond that, I don't advocate adding any more people to it. And also, cells cannot know who other cells are.
So can you tell me just a bit more detailed? How many people should be in one cell? How should be their relationship? Should they be really, very close? Should they be in contact with the outside world?
Well, the max cell would be three. And to work efficiently, they operate like they're not involved with our kind of racial thinking at all. They go about their job in the community, whatever it might be. Sometimes they even pretend to be of an opposite view on race. I say, look, if someone brings up something racial and you want to have some fun, well, you'll be more racial mixing than they are. And say, look, that guy's a racist, man. Accuse him, you know what I mean? And so it's all about unconventional warfare. In other words, to put it briefly, we feel as white Aryan people, European people, that care about being white, we are behind enemy lines. We have to operate like we're behind enemy lines because the system, the government, the military, the media, all of them work against us. And so that's the way we have to operate. And so if you know how a soldier parachutes into an enemy territory, well, that's what we do. Even though we know people all around us have all kinds of associates, they don't have to know exactly what we are thinking or what we're into.
And if you take the cell, you said it could be a brother or really close friend, so does it have to be people that really trust each other?
Absolutely. Your life depends on it. You may end up being in prison for the rest of your life if you pick the wrong people. And so you don't want a bunch of people. You don't want to belong to anything. You don't want to have a membership card. You don't want to take any oaths. No uniforms, no flags. Like Mao Zedong said, a revolutionary swims in the sea of the people, to where you can go anywhere and people don't know who you are, don't know what you're thinking, and like that. Now me, I can't do that. I have to be out in the open.
So just if you could once, like, describe in your own words how many people and how their relationship should be to each other.
Well, in a cell situation, maximum three. And then you got a problem because a lot of times people, if they put enough pressure on them and maybe even torture them, the best can roll over and turn on you. But still, three people, if you insist on having somebody around you, three people would be max. Could be men, women, whatever. Whoever you feel absolutely comfortable that person would never cause you a problem.
Just a second.
Yeah, I know. Can you, Mary?
Mary,
yeah.
They're picking up that sound.
Okay.
The sounds are going really tight like this.
Okay.
It's very
similar.
Very
shot.
Very
okay, you bury it up. Okay, good.
So what is, like if you take the leaderless resistance, the cell strategy, and the lonely wolf, what is the advantage of these kind of...
People don't know what's going what we're doing. I don't even know. We have lone wolves all over the United States and other countries that they don't know who it is. They don't know anything because they can't track them down. They can't infiltrate them. I mean, you can't infiltrate one person, you know. And you can try to infiltrate three people, but you wouldn't let them in, you see. So, I've been infiltrated many times. In fact, in only about 3 years ago, I was raided by the ATF and turned my house upside down unconstitutionally, but two men were helping me do video and TV programs, turned out to be ATF agents. And I see you can't have anybody like around you, you know, because if you leave them an opening, they're going to infiltrate you.
So this is also an idea that the leaderless resistance that uses the group Blood and Honor. So perhaps can you explain me, what is your relationship to Blood and Honor?
Well, they send me information, magazine once in a while, things like that. But Blood and Honor is pretty much a public, out-in-the-open outfit. So other than receiving a magazine or something in the email from them, we have no contact. I think I've answered some of their questions and they put in their magazine before. So we do have some contact that way, like I have some contact with organizations, but only one guy, I mean the leader and me.
And do you have the feeling that kind of your ideology is kind of influencing Blood and Honor?
Well, I hope I'm influencing a lot more than Blood and Honor, but I hope so. I'm trying to change the struggle from being a right-wing, reactionary, neocon, ineffective movement into something that's viable for massive numbers of working class white people, to get away from the Republican stuff and all that kind of stuff and make a left turn, to be perfectly honest. And I've been making a left turn for quite some time. If you would hear me talk about all these other issues like the environment and corporations and banks and like that, you'd think I was in the Communist Party, no, a leftist, you know, a progressive. But on the racial issue, I haven't changed at all. I want to bring good people out of the left and good people out of the right and bring it together in one big deal, you know. I mean, not so much in the end I want it to be a big deal, but for now, it's going to take years of building. I'll probably be gone before it happens.
But many people from Blood and Honor or the Ku Klux Klan told us that you're kind of a godfather figure. Do you feel like inspiring them?
Well, if they do right, I do. But if they go out and do crazy stuff and get arrested and sent to prison for the rest of their life over something that doesn't gain us anything, then they're not listening to me. A lot of guys will say, well, you're my godfather like that. But then I say, well, what do you think about this? And they're wrong, you know. And so they're not, they're still right wing because the right wing still has a lot of control, as you would call the far right. They call it in Europe, they call it the far right, you know. And the leaders in the right wing just can't make a transition. They can't go where they can win. They want to stick with the old methods that have failed and failed and failed. And they influence these young guys. And then the guys say, well, we like you, Tom, but then they go to these meetings and stuff and listen to these people. And they take them right back into the old reactionary right wing. And that's a problem.
And do you see, you've been in the Ku Klux Klan, you know Blood and Honor. Is there any ideological concept between these two groups?
I was happy for 5 years in the KKK, except I was always having to put out brush fires and get members out of jail and everything else. I finally gave up. We wanted to make it a viable political organization, and that's why I ran for Congress as a Klansman and won the Democratic nomination for Congress. And I thought, well, here we go. We could, you know, maybe put the costumes away and let's get the suits on and get the briefcase and the Lexus and go down to City Hall, you know. But it didn't work out because I had to fight the people like Nancy Pelosi, who personally brought the cops in and kept me out of the Democrat National or State Committee. I was supposed to have three people sitting on the State Central Committee and like that, and they unconstitutionally threw me out. So I said, to hell with your system. I'm going to tear your system down. Now I'm going to be the insurgent. I don't want nothing to do with the system. I want to tear it down. The worse it gets, the better. We have a motto that says, worse is better for now. Because there's nothing we can do to stop the rot in this country until it goes all the way down. And it's going pretty fast.
So are there ideological similarities between Ku Klux Klan and Blood and Honor? Are there ideological ideas they share?
Well, they share the survival and advancement of the white race. On other issues, it's like the lone wolves. The lone wolf must agree totally on the survival and advancement of the white race, period. Beyond that, they can have a lot of different opinions on certain things in the country. We're not a dictatorship, and we don't tell people how they gotta, exactly how they gotta do things. As long as the overriding religion, if you will, is of the race. So they can come from the left or the right or wherever they come from. I've recruited Trotskyites and anarchists and all kinds of people.
So was the idea of the leaderless resistance already important during your time at the Ku Klux Klan?
Well, no. We were operating as an organization with the KKK, and we had groups all over the place. And so, no, that was an entirely different concept. It took me several years to evolve into this leaderless resistance and lone wolf concept.
So do you think it now plays a role, for example, for Blood and Honor? Are they kind of also taken up this idea of leaderless resistance?
Well, I don't follow everything everybody else is doing. I'm so busy myself. I'm doing a radio show every day. I do all kinds of TV, and I do email. I really don't get time to watch what everybody else is doing. It's not that I don't care or not interested. I just don't get time. People call me all the time, and they're rumoring about things, and I said, look, I ain't got time for that. My plate is full. I mean, so exactly how Blood and Honor feel at this moment and how we have things we coincide on, I don't know for sure. I'd have to read their magazine again, I guess. You know, I'm not opposed to them, let me put it that way. They're not my enemy, that's for sure.
As you said, like, you're becoming more and more left, as you say.
Yes.
In some parts, probably communist. If you remember the ARF, the terrorist group in Germany, the left wing,
yes.
Do you think in terms of somehow leaderless resistance, they did a good job back then?
Well, we have the same thing in this country where we had the Order, who were good men who declared war on the United States government. But the problem was that it wasn't time and they didn't have the men and it fell apart pretty fast, but they were good men and honorable men. Robert Matthews was killed by the government and like that. So, and then we've had a couple of more like that. And I'm saying it's not time for any of that. This stuff running around robbing banks and stuff, well, they're going to get you. I mean, you know, the thing for you to do is study, train, take care of your families, have your defensive weapons, legal defensive weapons, and wait. Our time is not yet. It's coming, but it's not yet. And so I try to talk guys out of going out there and throwing their life away for, killing a Turkish restaurant guy or something? I mean, I'm sad for these people that get that idea that they can overthrow with a small group the government. You remember? You know, what was that other outfit, the left wing group?
The ARF.
No, back in the 70s.
Yeah, that's them.
No, I mean
the Red Army Fraction.
Well, yeah, but there was that other group. What was their name? Anyhow, the one that's took the banker and killed him and stuffed him in a trunk back in the 70s. Bader-Meinhof.
Yeah, that's them.
Oh, that's the same?
Yeah, that's
oh,
them.
Well, yeah. Well, they had some tactically good ideas in the sense of organization of what they were doing, but you can't take on the whole government. I mean, you got to bring the government, deteriorate the government, weaken the government. If you think the government needs to be weakened, if you love the government, well, that's your situation. There's a saying I got out of a movie one time, if you want to destroy something very powerful, don't hit it head on. Just step aside. It'll destroy itself. And right now, European national governments, federal governments, United States government, they're eating themselves alive. And as the economic crash continues to get worse, there'll be time for people like me. Right now, there's nothing much I can do, except I'm an ideological terrorist. I use words and pictures.
So if we now look to last year when the NSU was discovered, that was this little cell, three people in Germany killing over 10 years, Turkish people, one Greek person. It's called NSU in short terms. How do you perceive the NSU here in America?
Well, like I told our friends, I said, you're not going to get anywhere going around killing a Turk on the corner or a black or something like that. We've got to solve the whole thing, maybe through negotiations at some point. But if you're going to get rid of people in mass, you got to just get them all out, and you got to do it with the power of a system that you control, because you're not going to get them out with the system that's in there now. Whether you can encourage to pay them money to go home, or whether you some way make a negotiation to where we'll give you this part of this state or something like that, maybe. Otherwise, it'll be bloody civil war. It'll start over economics, but it'll turn to race. It always does.
But how did you know more about the NSU? How's the percept in America? Can you read about it? How did you hear about it?
The only way I know about it was on the internet. I mean, I get everything from everywhere, so I read as much as I can. And I saw where, in fact, I've seen them in Russia, too, doing the same thing. And I sort of grit my teeth because I hate to see these young people throwing their life away when we'll need them in a bit in the big battle, not the little teeny battles, you know.
Were you surprised that there was a group, small group of people doing that in Germany?
No, because that's a right-wing thing. They get to talking to the right wingers, and they get this idea: well, we're gonna get five guys and take on the government. Well, it ain't gonna happen. Recently, I received an email where some people were going to buy 2,000 acres out in Idaho, and they're going to have all the patriots in there, so-called patriots. They didn't say white patriots. I don't know. And I said, well, yeah, the government will love that, because if you resist the government, it only takes one F-16 and two canisters of napalm to wipe your whole country out. So I say, you got to act as individuals, and the lone wolf like me, we're all over the place. You don't know where we're at. Half the people who send me letters, I don't even know them. I don't know where they're at. And most of them that are lone wolves don't send me anything. They're just out there and they're dug in.
But if we have a closer look at the NSU, it was three people and they were living in the underground during 13 years and they weren't discovered by police nor by security service or anything.
Well, so Germans are pretty smart. Maybe smarter than some of our people, you know. So, no, that was effective, but being able to survive underground like that, I give them credit for that. But in the end, they get caught, and they're going to spend most of their life in prison. And I don't want people to think that I would never resort to violence against the government or whatever, but I don't want anybody going out there and wasting their life and not gaining anything. I mean, killing one Turk, I mean, some shop owner, I mean, you know, that's not revolution as far as I'm concerned. That's playing at revolution. If they'd have gone for some big shot in the Bundeswehr or whatever you call it over there, that'd have been a different story. At least the at least the ARF you're talking about, at least they went after big shots, you know.
But still, they kind of made people afraid.
Well, the Turk over there, he's a victim too. He didn't want to come over there. He came over there to try to make a living, just like these illegal aliens. It's not their fault. It's the economic system that causes this problem. So I keep telling people, you got to go for the people that caused the problem if you're going to go. And if you're going to throw your life away, at least go for the people that are causing the problems. The big shot corporation leaders, the big bankers, all of those people. The little guy isn't causing this. If conditions were right, the illegal alien go back home. But we screwed up his whole economy with NAFTA and so forth like that. So you can't, these right-wingers, though, they always seem to want to start at the bottom, or they want to say, well, it's convenient to beat up this guy, you know, or they go out and get drunk and they beat some non-white up. That's not our game.
So if you look at them, three people living in the underground, knowing each other very well even before they were going to the underground, can you imagine that they were inspired by your cell strategy, by your legalist resistance?
Possibly, but I think they were more probably influenced by the order and the organization led by Bob Matthews that had a and took on the government and everybody else in this country. And there's been a couple of other groups like that that actually went out and did. You know, this one Aryan Republican Army, they robbed 25 banks. I mean, you know, like that. That's where they get that information from. Because I don't advocate that stuff. I said there may be a time when that's going to be needed, but it's not now.
But they, well, as we know now, they had connections to Blood and Honor, and Blood and Honor kind of spreads your idea of the legalist resistance.
Well, if they're listening to me and listen to my radio show, I'm telling them over and over, this is not the time for the big war. The big war is coming, but it's not here yet. So don't go out and do something crazy and get yourself taken out of the battle before it even begins. You know, they had a group called, I think, the Levelers in the colonies back when this country first started. And they started an aborted revolution about 20 years before the main revolution came down in the Carolinas. And they caught them and they hung them all. Why? Well, they didn't have enough backing. They didn't have enough money. They didn't have enough power. And it was too soon. Timing is everything. Timing.
So you don't feel like you could have inspired them?
I would inspire them to wait and train and put on a suit and don't wear uniforms and don't wear patches and don't wear swastikas and don't wear anything that will identify you and wear your hair like everybody else and get yourself a regular-looking car carry a regular-looking briefcase and be just like working people, so you can walk among them and work among them and gradually influence people to your ideas, and gradually you gain power. But you can't do it that way. You just can't do it. And I feel so sad because I lost friends of mine, you know, with the order.
So if somebody said, well, they kind of followed your plan, although they didn't really did a good job, but would you feel kind of guilty for those people who died because they probably just followed your idea?
They didn't follow my idea. I don't tell anybody, if they want to go underground, that's fine, but they can have regular jobs. They don't have to hide out. They don't have to rob banks. They don't have to kill Turks. I mean, they need more people. They need more power. They need political influence. They need all that. So they couldn't possibly have been listening to what I've been saying now for, 20 years. I told all the skinheads, forget it. Get out of that. Get rid of all that. Just like I tell these so-called Hollywood Nazis, forget that stuff. Quit marching around like that. You know, they're stupid. You'll never get any power. You'll never get any place. You got to get sneaky like your enemy is sneaky. and infiltrate him and make him think you're your friend. You know, you can work in a bank, slap the bank president on the back. You don't have to rob him, and then maybe later on you can hit the main vault and get all the money.
So you would say they didn't do a good job?
Well, they weren't good guerrillas. If in wartime, you might have said they were good guerrillas, but killing a Turk shop owner and some lady cop, that doesn't make sense to me. I mean, that's playing guerrilla. That's playing revolutionary. It's not really revolutionary. I'm sorry. I feel bad that they did it and got caught, and now they're going to spend all kinds of time in jail. And I guess what?
The guys killed themselves. It's killed only them. The woman who's left.
Yeah, well, I think killing yourself would be better than spending the rest of your life in prison. And hopefully she doesn't have to go away forever. You know, I hope her whole life isn't ruined because of this. You know, 'cause I don't want to see young people use my words to throw their life away.
So they should have, as you say, have gathered more intelligence, waited longer? Or what?
And got good jobs and get educated. Like I told the skinheads 20 years ago, I said, now go into the university, get good jobs, get into government service, get into military, whatever you want to get into a trade and make a lot of money, and we'll all work together behind the scenes. That's what happened in Italy after World War II. Half the fascists went underground, and half the fascists went into business. And now Italy's got some powerful fascists. They don't call themselves fascists, but anybody who knows what's going on knows that they are. That was smart.
And what would you say, I mean, how long should they have been waiting? What would be the right moment?
Well, look how long they've waited. In Italy, I mean, you know what, 40-some years or so, and they build up business, and there's underground there. Once in a while they do something, you know, and then the business builds up. And so there hasn't been sort of a fascist takeover, but there could be, like in Greece. I mean, there could be a takeover, because I know a lot of Greeks, or I've known a lot of Greeks, very radical, but they were professionals. I know guys that ran the unions in Greece. I know one guy that shut down the whole airport with his labor union. He said, we want more pay, and we don't get it. We're shutting down the whole airport, and he did it too. So you got to have people with some power. We have no people with a lot of power. You got to have power. If you don't have power, forget doing anything. And sometimes you have to use roundabout methods to get that power.
So if we look back in your life, you once were in a totally other case found liable for intentionally inciting skinheads to be violent. Are you afraid of ever coming in that situation again, or is that why you kind of step away from that violence?
Neither, because I was not guilty of anything. That was a total setup, and it was meant to take me out of action. I didn't tell any skinheads to be violent. Never did. Never sent any skinheads to hurt anybody. And the people who are against me, like Southern Poverty Law Center and the ADL, they know that. They know that I didn't tell skinheads to go out and hurt somebody. That happened. There were skinheads up there in the Northwest, and some of them were pretty violent guys, you know. So, but I didn't control them. They didn't work for me. But this was an opportunity they used to clean me out and thought I would disappear. But it only made me more radical. I lost my house. I lost my business. But I climbed back up, and now I'm more dangerous to them than I ever was before.
So you're looking to Germany, you would say it was stupid killing those shop owners, and they should have better waited for a big coup?
Absolutely. In National Socialist Germany, you didn't see five brown shirts trying to attack the government, did you? They waited till they had 3 million and they were ready to go, and until Hitler sort of sidetracked them. So, I mean, you know, you got to get the power. And if you're just going to play like you're in a movie, you're going to get hurt. And I don't want any of these people to think that I dislike them or hate them or anything like that. I'm just disappointed that they're not listening to people like me that are trying to show them the right way or the left way or whatever way, you know.
But if you take, as an example, the National Socialist Germany, so if we compare that, even if you say they acted too early, but leaderless resistance somehow, sometime, always ends up in violence or in murder, doesn't it?
Well, the government does a lot more murder of people like us than we do than we would do of them. The National Socialists in Germany were being murdered all the time in the streets of Germany. They were fighting for their lives against the right wing. I keep reminding these so-called Hollywood Nazis it was the right wing and the communists that the National Socialists were fighting in the streets. The mistake there they made was that when they had 3 million brown shirts, they didn't take over, and they let Hitler turn them into a war in which once you go to war, you're going to lose, and they lost the whole country that way. The People's Army was the brown shirts, and they had, like I say, 3 million. They had the Strasser brothers and all those people. They had the people to take over Germany, and they wouldn't have had an external war. They wouldn't have got into this big Jewish thing, because the Jews that had assimilated in Germany would have been asked to take an oath of loyalty to the Reich, and fine, you stay here. The ones who didn't, or the ones that were in the Communist Party, all that, shove them out of Germany. They should have asked me before they did that, but I was awfully young at the time.
But doesn't the leaderless resistance, even if I wait for the right moment, end up in violence? Because nobody is...
Well, violence is...
taken over just like that.
Nothing new about violence. I mean, any great controversy usually ends up in violence. We have a government of homicidal maniacs as presidents that are bombing people all over the world and occupying them and killing hundreds of thousands of Afghanis and Iraqis and illegally invading countries, and then they would point the finger at us and say, "You're terrible because you might have got violent with a few people." Are they kidding? These guys are warmongers, should all be tried and hung by the neck until dead. Bush and Cheney, all those people, I hate them. The media are always saying, "Well, you guys are violent." You got the most violent system in the world, bombing everybody, and you're pointing a finger at me because I gave a black guy a bloody nose? I mean, come on.
But is violence or murder mean of the leaderless resistance?
No. I love peaceful. I like things to happen peaceful. If you can get power peaceful, that's fine with me. I don't want to, you know, it hurts when you get hit in the head. I've been in riots. People have tried to assassinate me, and it's not fun. I would rather negotiate with blacks, negotiate with Hispanics and that kind of, and make some kind of a deal. But first, we got to straighten out Washington. And I've told the blacks, nationalists over and over, and other people, I said, "Look, you attack Washington, fine. We won't interfere. We attack Washington, you don't interfere. In fact, we both might attack Washington together. And then after it's over, we'll sit down at the table and split up the spoils." Okay? Sounds like a peaceful thing to me.
Attack Washington peacefully?
Well, no, we wouldn't attack it peacefully. I'll guarantee you that. The capital would probably be moved to Kansas City. Of course, I believe in going back to state rule anyhow. Like in Germany, you were only federalized, 100 years ago or something like that. And Bavaria was a separate country. You should have kept it that way. You see what happens when you federalize things? Immediately you got into world wars, World War I and the Civil War, 1848, immediately. When you had separate little kingdoms like that, they were pretty peaceful. Once in a while they went against each other, but maybe swords and arrows and stuff like that. Same way here. I want to go back to what Patrick Henry wanted in this country. The Articles of Confederation, state rule. I want the Indiana to become a sovereign state. I want Illinois to become a sovereign state. I want all these states to become sovereign and tell the federal government, "You're a failure. You've destroyed us. We don't want anything to do with you anymore.
But if you say you want to attack Washington, then it doesn't work out without violence, does it?
I'm not afraid of violence. If I have to use violence, I'd use violence, but you have to apply violence professionally and correctly, not indiscriminate violence. That's a problem with a lot of these young guys. They want to apply it indiscriminately. You don't hurt innocent people. You hurt guilty people. If you're going to use violence, you go after people who've done bad things. You know, the Klan used to do that at one time. I mean, wife beaters and stuff like that. They take them out and flog them, things like that, which I agree with. But this right-wing thing about, well, we're going to go out and beat up this black guy just because he's black and he's standing on the corner is ridiculous.
So if you see those three people in Germany, the NSU, would you call them terrorists? Or?
I'd call them probably guerrillas, unconventional warfare. Most of the terrorists are in our government, and they're in your government. They're in the British government. The people that have all the power are the terrorists. The people like this, they don't really come up to being terrorists. I mean, otherwise they would have strapped on C4 and walked into a Turkish mosque and blown the whole place up, you know. That's a terrorist.
Well, they had some bombs in Turkish streets, I want to call it.
They may have had them, but they didn't use them.
Oh, they used them. There was one street in Cologne there. They put up a bomb and injured more than 20 people.
Well, that's still not what doesn't raise to my level. I just want to put them on a boat and send them home. I don't want to kill them, you know. Don't have to kill them. If you got the power, you just round them up and you indemnify them for their property. And you say, sorry, you're going to have to leave, but here's a check, and here's for your house, here's for your business, and here's this. Now you go back there and we will live in peace with you because I have no quarrel with anybody in these other countries. I don't want to occupy them. I don't want to send an army into them like the corporations do. I want to live in peace with other countries, but I want racial people and their cultures to be separate. So people living in their own country under their own roofs, I have no qualms with. And I hate my government for destroying these kind of people. You will never know how much I hate these people, like George Bush and all of them. I just despise those people because they're psychopaths is what they are.
But probably the higher ideological idea of the trio was to frighten people in Germany so they go back to their country.
No. I mean, they couldn't, you know, with a few people like that. The Turks are making money in Germany. They got jobs. It's going to take a lot more than three or four guys, four people, popping off a few of them to get them to go home. No. They just have to have it explained properly, but you have to have the power to do it. I told the government, I said, look, you want me to straighten out the problem on the border? Write me a contract. I'll work for half the price of the Border Patrol and we'll solve it. And I'll get the Mexicans to help me.
So if we stay a bit with Germany, when you've been with the army in Germany as a soldier,
yes.
Did you have any contacts to Germans?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the time, every day. But I wasn't political at the time. I wasn't even racial at the time. So while I was over there, I didn't do much but traveled and all over Europe, and I had a lot of German friends.
But did you somehow get in contact with the right-wing people?
No, no. I didn't know up from down then. I didn't know, you know, what was going on. I was only 18 when I went over there. So I remember one night, though, we went out to this little town where we liked to go and have a few drinks. We only hung out. We were up at a radio station in the middle of nowhere, so there were no big towns around. So we'd go down, and we had all these friends in these German towns. Well, anyhow, we were walking down the street, a buddy of mine, and we heard a bunch of dancing and singing upstairs in this place, and we went in there, all of a sudden everybody went silent. And they looked at us really mean, and so I think we better get out of here. And we got out of there, and we asked some journal, what was that? He said, that was a communist meeting. Here we were, two GIs walking into a communist meeting. That was funny.
But you were discharged from Army, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did that have anything to do with political?
No, I was honorably discharged.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. And then I went to work for Douglas Aircraft out in California in the missile industry, and we put that second stage to the moon together out there. I was there when they wheeled it out of the company. I was also in charge in the laboratory of all the equipment that was used on the rockets, ICBMs that they were shooting downrange to Kwajalein Island and all that. So I had a pretty, you know, I was top secret, you know.
And when you've been, you've been into the Ku Klux Klan, if you've been a Grand Dragon in California, so did you have any contacts to Germany in that time?
I may have. I don't recall at the time. I knew Manfred Roeder, yes, Manfred Roeder, because he was the one who started trying to shut down the porno theaters over there. He went in and threw stinkum stuff all over the theater. That's how he got started. He came over and we had a big dinner for him. And then later when he went to jail for something else, his wife came over and we had a big dinner for her. So I knew him.
Through the Ku Klux Klan or?
Well, I was in the KKK at the time. In fact, wait a minute, I think that was before I was in the KKK. Yeah, I was just a right-wing conservative, anti-communist radical. I worked for Barry Goldwater. I worked for Ronald Reagan. I ran his headquarters once in California until I found out what a rat he was, and then I didn't want to work for him anymore.
But beginning of the 90s, I think, there was this cross-burning in Berlin where Lehman was there. Did you have any contact there with the German KKK or something?
Oh, the one where we were all arrested?
There was one in Germany, in Berlin.
Oh, that was Dennis Mahan.
Yes.
He's my friend. He went over there. I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm going to Germany and start the KKK. I said, you're out of your mind. I didn't think any German would want to be in the KKK. I mean, it's just not a European thing. So he was working for the aircraft companies. He got free tickets or something. So next thing I knew, he came back. He had pictures of these guys out in the woods with the Klan burning a cross in Germany. I thought, well, wow.
But did you know any people of the Germans involved in that?
No. No, I don't want to know, you know, because they'd be in a lot of trouble over there. See, I have free speech here so far. Over there, you know you don't have free speech, especially if you speak about things the government don't like you to speak about. You can speak about anything you want as long as the government likes it, you know, or puts up with it.
But didn't you once try to get into Germany or your son and it didn't work out?
Yeah, my son and a young guy from Canada were asked by a radio station to go to Germany, and they were going to take him down to Munich and meet one of the leaders of the NS down there. I forgot his name now. He's long gone. And then they were going to Auschwitz and tour Auschwitz. And John said, what do you think? Sure, free trip to Europe. Why not? So they get on a plane and they're coming down into Frankfurt, and my son's sharp on this stuff because he's raised around it, and he saw some guys in suits down at the bottom of the gangplank, and he punched this Jewish guy that was taking him over there. He says, I think we got a problem. Oh, no, no problem. You know, we're KFI, we're a big radio station. John says, oh, okay. So they grabbed John, took him in, strip searched him, tried to interrogate him and that made him mad because he will never talk and I won't either. Well, there's nothing really much to talk about. He was just going over there escorted by a radio station, you know. So then they threw him on a plane and I got a call in the middle of the night from Chicago. They put two armed guards, one on each side, and took him to Chicago and dumped him out. He called me. I said, where the hell are you at? He said, I'm in Chicago. They kicked me out of Germany. I said, well, get a hotel room and then fly on down to San Diego. And he did. You know.
So did you ever try to get in?
No, because I said, if my son can't get in, I sure can't get in.
So what would you like if you could go to Germany? Are there any people you would meet? Or
I don't need to go any place. We've got the internet now. We've got great TV. I watch, you know, all the, you know, Russia Today. I get the Arab stuff. I can watch everything on the big screen and talk to them every morning, you know. I don't have to go any place. It's dangerous to go places.
So is there still any German you're in contact with?
Not on a regular basis. I once in a while get an email from some person who says, I like what you're doing, you know. But Ernst Zundel, who I knew, I haven't had contact with him for a long time, or Manfred Roeder, I haven't heard from him for a long time. So, no.
So if we talk about Zundel or Roeder, what was your connection with them?
Oh, we were good friends. Good people. I liked them. I supported them all the way. Yeah.
So you got to know them about the racial ideas?
Well, they were more anti-Jewish than I was. You know, I was racial, and I was critical of the top Jews that do bad things, but they tended to be more into the Jew thing than the race thing. And, well, maybe it's because Zundel lived in Canada and it wasn't that big a deal in Canada. And Ernst lived over there, and the other one lived over there in Germany, and they didn't have that big a problem, I guess, at the time. So they were always working on that Holocaust thing. And I said, yeah, forget it. It's going to be going on forever. Milking the German workers down to pay for Israel's tall buildings, you know. They've been milking Germany and the United States and England and everybody else. It's time. When already? When is it over? I mean, you know, we said we're sorry and we give you billions of dollars. Does this ever end, this blackmail? That's the way I feel about it.
So right now you're not anymore in contact with them anymore?
No.
So
they're welcome to contact me. I mean, but I'm not going over to Germany to sit down and drink a beer with them because I'd get picked up, you know. I haven't done anything. You know, I was thrown in jail in Canada. I was invited up there to give a speech. I had about 500 people in the audience. I gave the speech and fine, and then we're going out. We're going to go down and have a beer, and all of a sudden they stop our car and drag my son and I out on the sidewalk, threw us on the ground, had automatic weapons at our head. And I said, what the hell is this? All I did was give a speech. I didn't advocate killing anybody or blowing anything up. And they threw me in jail and my son and kept us there for a week and then deported us and said, you can't come back to Canada. If you're a drug dealer or a white slaver or into prostitution, you come in here anytime. We love you. But you're a white racist. You can't ever come back to Canada.
So you feel discriminated, or?
Well, I expect my enemies to do that. And when the worm turns, I've got my own plans, you know. You got to watch what you do to people because you never know what's going to happen if they get in power, you know.
But I don't want to be, I mean, you're getting older as well. Do you think your time is still to come, or?
I planted my seeds. If I died today, my seeds were planted a long time ago. And now these guys that I knew when they were 15 or 35 or 40, and they know exactly what's going on. And so if I died tonight, it would go on. In fact, maybe it might go on better. Some people might think that, you know. But anyhow, no. I'm not an egomaniac as far as that's concerned. I'm not even a good dictator.
So you think probably even for the others it's, I want to say, easier to act because they don't stand in public as you do?
I don't quite understand the question.
Oh, so, like, if you say your seats are already set, so
yeah,
there's people coming after, and perhaps it's easier for them to work because they're not as well-known as you are?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't believe some of the positions our people are in. The government drives the government crazy because they don't know where we're at. They know where some are at. But some of the people are so buried so deep they could never find them. And that's what bothered them when I said to guys, you know, 10 years ago, no, 15, I said, go in the military, learn how to be a soldier, and keep your mouth shut. And so you know how to operate all that stuff, and then come back, and we may need you someday. And that drove them crazy. They said, oh, my God, the racists are invading the military. Well, they had all kinds of gangbangers and killers in the military, the black... The Crips and the Bloods and the Mexican Mafia, they're all in there. But a few white guys get in there that are racist. They went, oh, my God, we got to get them out of here. I mean, you know. But now I tell them, it's gotten so bad. I said, don't go in the military at all. I tell our people, don't go in the military.
But so, because in the beginning you said of most of the lonely wolves, you don't even know where they're in, but of some you know, like, that they're playing important roles?
No, I don't.
Oh, because you just said if government knew...
I hope they are.
Okay.
I can't be absolutely sure, but I get little clues once in a while. Once in a while in the middle of the night, I get a little call. I don't know who it is, I don't know where they're at, but they're there. They're there.
And that makes you proud? Or?
Yes, it does. Because that's what I want. Pure, straight underground, unconventional army. Mostly psychological, mostly propaganda. But able to be violent if the time comes that we need it.
So you have your radio show that is on every day, or you send
yes.
people. Are there people in Germany listening to it too?
Yes, I hear it's heard all over the place. I have no idea how many, but it's up there on the internet, and we get hundreds of thousands of hits a month. I mean, sometimes.
Anybody who has, like, you send it to in Germany, or that is donating from Germany to your show?
No, I only have a close circle of people who actually donate, and that's all I need. I don't need lots of money. And these people get it fresh every day. The others have to wait 2 or 3 weeks, and then they can go up to the internet, resist.com, and they can download all the shows they want free. And so, every country all over the place, there's people listening to it. I don't know exactly how many, but I know we get a hell of a lot of hits on our website.
And you can see if they're from Germany, or you can see, or you get sometimes mailings from people from Germany?
Well, not too much. Enough to know they're out there, they're listening. But I don't encourage people to contact me much. I want them to be private. I want them to be clever and silent, you know. But I will talk to people. I mean, if they write me a letter, because a lot of young, I'm getting a tremendous, well, not a tremendous amount, but I'm getting a constant flow of young teenagers, white, that are totally fed up. And I try to bring them along, encourage them to go the right way and not do something stupid.
So have you, before the trio was discovered, have you ever heard of Uwe Bönhardt, Uwe Mundlos and Beate Schäfer, or have you ever been in contact with those three people?
No. I rarely get an email from Germany. I know there's people out there listening. And in the past, when I published a newspaper, I know sometimes I'd send a newspaper over there. But other than that, no, I don't know these people. And I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
And you didn't know about these three people living in the underground or something before they...
No. I got the word just like you would on the internet or in the newspaper. You know.
There's a union called Nationalpolitisches Forum, National Political Forum, NPF. Mm. They were pretty active end of the 90s. Have you ever been in contact with them?
I don't think so.
So you can't remember any union organization?
I can't think so. Organizations don't like me because I speak against organizations. I say don't join anything. Don't join these outfits because they're full of informants. Every one of these groups has got informants all over the place. In this country, if you're in the left or the right, don't make any difference. They got informants in there. Any organization, you could be the mothers for pretty flowers, and they'd have an informant in there. Because this is becoming a police state.